This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their Highlander Tour, which takes you on a food and beer adventure of the Southern Highlands. This full-day tour showcases some of the quality beer, wine, mead and cider being made in the region today, and also includes a lunch featuring fresh local produce. Tours leave from Sydney, Canberra or Goulburn, and there's also a budget option for pickup in the Highlands itself. To book your tour today, visit daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Welcome everyone to Sessionable. I'm Adrian, and I'm here today with a couple of legends of the Australian beer industry, I guess you could say. Maybe?
We wouldn't say that.
So I'm here with Brendan Varis from Feral and Richard Watkins from Bedspoke. How are you going, guys?
Good, Adrian. How are you, matey?
Yeah, pretty good. Better than yesterday.
Better than yesterday.
I was a bit rough around the edges yesterday. We had the opening gala a couple of days ago for Beer Week.
We did. I reckon it's a bit of a sign of how times have moved on in craft. It wasn't that long ago when Kolsch and 4% pale ale and 5% pale ale was the standard fare, but I think most of it was much stronger and hoppier. And
yeah, I was on the
drunk all night long.
I was on the Saison DuPonts for most of the night, I believe.
Okay, well, you'll be a victim. You're not the biggest fella either, so a big bottle of DuPont will go a long way with you.
How have you guys been going this Beer Week so far?
Beer Week's been good for me. Good afternoon here at the Albert yesterday,
yep.
And then up to the podium event that Ben Spoke and Bolter and Stone and Wood did for a little while.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And then some hygiene. Oh, cool little place called Wings and Tins that I never knew existed where we had dinner, ripping wings and obviously
the other
parts obvious, few Ben Spokes. That was a cool, real cool little place that I discovered, so it was good for me.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's always good to come up to Sydney and see what's going on. Hopefully we bend a few people's spokes and give them some beers that, they haven't had a chance to taste before. So gala night was good to see, just not only the quality of beer was pretty good, but also the audience that came along to it was really interesting. It was wasn't quite what I was expecting. It was quite a varied audience, which is great to see so many different people now getting into beer.
Yeah. And did you have a cycling event on earlier today as well?
Yeah, it's currently going. You can get down to the Woolpack and ride some bikes and win some prizes and see if you can post the fastest time.
You've been doing those kind of events all over the place for a while now. How do people go with it? Like, do they get a bit? Do they tire themselves out a bit?
Down at Gabs in Melbourne, somebody had a heart attack on our bikes.
Oh, no.
But the story of it is that we actually saved his life because he had a heart condition that he never knew about. And he could have actually just fallen over at any particular time. But because it happened in a controlled environment, it was, he lived to tell the story. So, I think these days the pack of breweries that's out there is pretty big. So you got to somehow make yourself relevant and known without just doing the usual. Tap takeovers now are just, I think they're nearly a thing of the past because they've just been done to death.
Yeah, that's too common.
Yeah, so you've just got to try and do stuff that's a bit different.
Yeah, I guess the bikes and whatever random stuff Garage Project's doing at the moment, it does kind of put your name out there. How about you, Brendan? How have you been finding events as of late? Just kind of try and keep up with the big number of breweries that are just coming up.
It does come back to that, doesn't it? And how you did, it's where if you go back half a dozen years, there was actually a undersupply and an over-demand when it came to craft beer. There's probably more consumers than there was capacity to make beer, maybe a little bit more than five, but not much. And that's flipped on its head 180 degrees. There's now an absolute overcapacity, and whilst demand is growing, and certainly more and more people drink it every day, not at the rate that capacity's come online. So now you actually really do need to work to stand out above the crowd. And I guess it's very much, the strong brands that get a focus. So with obviously Ben Spoke and the bike and their bike events, it all ties in nicely. And other than that, you've got your lifestyle brands or your rock and roll brands, and everyone's got to find their little place. We I guess deliberately don't try and be the next lifestyle brand or Corona beer on the beach type one. That's not our shtick too much. Usually it's liquid first and whatever. I guess we're falling into a bit with probably Biggie bars becoming a theme that we're working on with Biggie Juice, probably not far from being a core range product for us.
Yep.
So our theme and events are probably going to be a bit around that over the next 12 months going forward. East Coast, West Coast IPA and hop, hip-hop type stuff. So, yeah,
cool.
That's where we're going.
And, like, speaking of, you know, strong brands, Hop Hog's been, you know, been alive for about 10 years now. You've just launched the cans as well. How have you been finding the kind of, I guess, transition from this regular, like, this, you know, IPA that you brewed 10 years ago that was not really a common thing in Australia to now being one of the most recognisable brands?
Yeah, I don't know if it's one of the most recognisable brands, I guess. Part, I mean, the cans come along at a good time. 10 years, like, ties in, nice little excuse to release that. Certainly, it's very hard to keep any craft beer at the top of everyone's mind. So, you know, it's been useful to have another pack format as an excuse to remind people about perhaps their old mate that they don't catch up with as often as they'd like to, with so many, you know, new fun cuddly toys around. So that's our thing for Hop Hog, is just, you know, keeping it fresh and front of mind. You know, the liquid is what it's always been, and I think it still stacks up pretty well. But it's just becoming a battle to just, you know, for us to just remind people that it's still there and it's still what it always was.
I think you're pretty lucky though, because, you know, I mean, IPA and hop driven, hop forward beers are what people want to drink at the moment. So
yeah, but there's thousands of them.
There is a lot of them, but, you know, as we all know, there's some that you know, get that hop balance right. And I think that's a hard thing to do. It's not everyone gets the hop balance right, and I think the good IPAs get that hop balance right.
Yeah, it's that, and then I think with time should come a level of, with consistency, trust. So, you know, if you don't just jag it once and then you go back to what you normally do, you probably don't have a long future in making hoppy beer. If you can repeat it regularly all day, every day, then with time people should trust it and should come back to it. That we rely pretty heavily on that idea as well.
Mm. Was it a bit of a challenge kind of maintaining consistency transitioning from bottle to can with the Hop Hog?
Not really. We've done it with Sly Fox and Perth Local dual skew stuff, so we kind of know what to expect there. There's not a lot different in the brew house or packaging. In fact, nothing.
Mm.
So we could have a tank that, a fermenter that's in there that might be on the schedule put down to be keg or bottle, but shoot, we're low on cans, we can just can that. It's not like we have to do too much.
It.
No,
yeah,
not at all. So not too much drama there.
Cool. Richard, you've been canning from day one of packaging. Have you found the take up of that in Canberra?
Yeah, I guess when we started to put Ben Spoke together, and we were always going to at some point package our beer and get it outside of our four walls. Maybe we did it a little bit sooner than we planned to do, purely due to the demand of people constantly asking for our beer outside of the four walls of the brew pub. But we'd always planned at that stage to do cans. In fact, when they were building the brew pubs in, we came on site and put can lids under the reinforcing, so when you stand downstairs in the brew pub and look up, you actually see can lids in the concrete.
Mm.
And that was our little sign that we're always going to do cans. And I guess, you know, having travelled to the States a few times and back in the early 80s, and just to see the can revolution starting off over there, and just knowing that, all right, Australia's, it's going to happen in Australia at some point. We're sure a little bit behind the US in terms of where their beer market is at the moment, but it was always going to happen. And so we've had really good uptake on our cans. Yeah, couldn't be happier with how our cans have gone.
You're kind of slowly expanding out into Australia, starting from, you know, just a Canberra base. How have you been finding that in the last 4 years?
Yeah, look, we had a lot of inquiries from outside of Canberra, but we never wanted to rush. We wanted to just do it in a controlled way, in a way that we could control our growth, so that you got to understand, it's great to be able to send pallets of beer everywhere all around Australia, but If you can't do it in a controlled way, like you can't meet expectations, you can't meet retailers' demands, then you just let people down all the time. So we've tried to do it in a controlled way. I think we are doing it in a controlled way, because as you grow, that means you need to buy more things, buy more equipment, you need to employ more staff, and I think we've got 73 staff now. So all those things, if you're doing it in a rush, you just you miss a lot of things, and you don't build the foundations you need to you know keep things like consistency and quality you know at the forefront.
Mm. How did you find the kind of the transition from working at a small brew pub like the Wig and Pen to a bigger brewery that had capacity to expand?
Yeah, look, that was a challenge for me because I'd really been a brew pub brewer. That's where I cut my teeth. One very little stint at the old Harn Brewery back in its day. But apart from that, yeah, I was a brewer in a brew pub. So moving into a bigger brew pub was one challenge. But then also moving and brewing at a production facility was certainly, you know, a learning curve. I mean, at the end of the day, you still make beer the same way. It's just a bit, you're just dealing with bigger volumes, bigger amounts of things that can go wrong too.
Same question to you, I guess, Brendan. You started off, I guess, as a brew pub brewer as well. What is it, like 15, 16 years ago now?
Yeah, a little bit more.
Yeah. And then I guess you've been slowly expanding for the last, you know, decade and a half, and you know, especially with the acquisition from CCA last year. How have you been adjusting at each change?
Yeah, similar. I mean, I had a bit of just project management and project brewing experience before opening Feral. But broadly, yeah, it was learn while, you know, like jump in and just learn to swim and keep your little straw above water sometimes. But, you know, brewing is, you know, 90% science, and then there's some mechanical aspects to it. So if you can just be theoretical and logical in the way you work through the mechanical aspects, the science doesn't change. And obviously, as long as the care and attention is always at the very highest level, typically it's, you know, you can work it out and find a way. But you know, obviously we're in an industry that's pretty open and sharing, so we can go and talk to our other people going through the same stuff, like, you know, handful of brewers around Australia, Rich and other people, and you know, visits to other breweries internationally that have, many of us have made the same steps.
Yeah.
So we're kind of lucky that it's, you know, fairly altruistic in that regard.
I'll reaffirm what Brendan's saying about the industry. It's a really sharing sort of, you know, family, I guess. When you become a brewer, and you know, certainly in Australia, it's like becoming part of a family. That, you know, it's like sitting down for breakfast in the morning and chatting to people about what they're doing, you know, what you're doing each day and whatever. So, you know, it's you know, it allows you to get up every day and go to work because of that sharing, because of that greatness that's comes with being part of the brewing industry.
Yeah, and the people often working in brewing in our own businesses have an absolute love and passion for it as well. So it's not, you know, they're the people that you're going to. You're not going to work with people that are begrudging having to work or begrudging having to turn up.
Yeah.
They're there and they want to be there, and they'll be there bloody all night long if it needs be to get the get the job done properly and well. So that actually does make it really easy to turn up when the people that you have to work with have the same mentality.
Hmm.
I don't know, can we go back to the cans? I asked you about your cans, and because you got those cool lids that rip right off. Where are you at with those, Rich, on this whole CDS? It would be a shame if you weren't able to keep using them because of the CDS.
Yeah, look, that's interesting.
CDS is Container Deposit Scheme.
Yeah, with this Container Deposit Scheme, you have to register your vessel, and we got a registration. Every product that's part of it has got a registration of 5 years on the design. Our lid, we've only got 2 years,
right.
So that'll be coming up pretty soon. That we've got to re-lodge our application on our closure. The things to think about though is that we were actually using those lids before they brought in the CDS. So you know you can't. It's going to be very hard for them not to give us another registration because you know, there's consumer laws there that are in place to protect, you know, businesses and companies from having, you know, issues with products that they're selling. So
the issue is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the issue is the lids, because they open the whole way, that they are saying that it is like not a complete container once the lid comes off.
What they're saying is the lid isn't recyclable. So the whole point of the container deposit scheme is to basically recycle the entire vessel. So what they're saying is that there's going to be lids lying around that don't get recycled.
Yep.
But then my argument to them is also that what about all the caps off PET bottles, like cake bottles and Schweppes bottles and stuff like that? I mean, there's going to be a hell of a lot more caps off those type of bottles lying around than bench spake, can lids. So there's lots of arguments there that aren't really. We decided not to pursue it at the start in terms of trying to get a longer registration. We actually haven't even really spoken to them about it, to be honest, and they're probably pretty reasonable about it, and probably we'll just lodge another registration and away we'll go. There may not be any issue. So that's just something we need to worry about. Northern Territory has allowed us to register the lids now for 5 years.
Yep.
ACT is allowing us, and they followed most of the New South Wales model.
Mm.
We're going through the registration process that's happening now in Queensland as well. So we haven't got that information back yet. But if they were to give us 5 years, then we're really hard then for New South Wales to not come on board.
Yeah, I guess the precedent's there from other systems.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Mm.
Separately, though, worst case scenario, and it doesn't sound like it's going to happen, but you couldn't use them. What does that mean? And just, I guess, a bit around the...
I don't even want to consider that.
No, but
I don't mean it in that way.
I mean more around, is it a brand thing? Is it a... Is the beer better that way? What made you go to that?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I think one of the things that you always talk about, you pour a beer out of a glass bottle into a glass so you can capture that aroma, you can see the beer, and you get that better taste experience. And I think one of the things with our cans is that you can see the beer, you can smell the beer so much better in our cans. And actually, I find them quite nice and easy to drink out of compared to a traditional can, which, because of the small opening, you sort of do the glug-glug a fair bit, when you're trying to drink the beer. But I find with ours that it's actually quite pleasurable to drink from.
So it wasn't for the quirky aspects. It's actually legitimate beer aspects.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was. It's
I actually find I spill more on my shirt with your cans. But...
Well, it depends how many you have.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that because.
I was going to ask about the can. Very good question, Brendan. Thank you.
Sorry to steal your thunder.
It's all right. I usually am the one that speaks the least out of the group, but everyone's bailed on me today, so...
Oh, is there normally more
people? Yeah, I needed a co-host, for that.
Okay. Oh, all right. I put my different hat on. I'm used to wearing lots of hats.
Actually, speaking of, legislation changes, one of the positive ones is, the announcement of the excise reforms for beer in Australia. Has that changed the way you guys have thought about releasing beers at all?
Well, I mean, you're referring to the recent change to allow...
The smaller vessels.
And the rebates, bigger rebate, I believe. Is that right? I think there's a bigger rebate. So for me, I've always been a really strong believer in that excise really plays a part in keeping the people in the beer industry for the right reasons.
Yep.
The last thing I actually want to see is the removal of excise. I think it's a barrier to entry for people. You have to make good product. You have to pay your tax, sure. But it actually stops people getting into the beer industry just to make lots of money out of it, making really cheap beer and flooding our beer market with really cheap beer, which isn't going to be good for anyone.
Yeah. And I guess that's why it was introduced in the first place, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think the recent changes, and this is the same as the changes that came in 5 years ago as well, have really done nothing for me. All they've done is the government's been able to tick a box to say they've actually looked at the alcohol reform and done something little. What needs to happen with the alcohol tax is it needs to be a volumetric tax. We should be paying the same amount of tax that wine and spirits and all alcoholic beverages pay.
Mm.
It should all be done as a volumetric tax rate. There should not be different rates for wine, different rates for spirits, different rates for beer. And so the government's been able to now pass that one off because obviously the way the government works obviously is that they need a number of members to form a parliament, and a lot of those members happen to be in a lot of very nice wine growing regions. Mm. So It was going to be very hard. It's going to be very hard struggle to change that. The current ones we've got at the moment, where they've lowered the container size down to, what did they lower it to?
Is it 8 litres?
8 litres or
something?
Yeah. I think that's actually not good either. I'll tell you why. Because now what's happened is you've got a lot of imported beer that used to be coming in 30-litre kegs, but they were paying the top excise rate, which then kept that beer at a higher price than local beer. But now all the imported beer that's coming in is now so much cheaper. And so they're actually now, we're now competing a lot more with international beer coming in. And as everyone knows, there's only so many taps out there in the marketplace, and now international beer is getting a better look in because people can buy, publicans can buy international beer cheaper. The rebate's good. The rebate's okay. I mean, it certainly will help the smaller breweries and people who, are just starting out on their journey and probably getting a bit more cash flow, getting a bit more cash like that at the size that they're at is probably exceptionally helpful. But realistically, considering the amount of money we spend on alcohol tax, moving it to, 100,000 or whatever it is, it's great, and I'll take it. And Ben Spake's basically been able to employ someone else with the extra rebate that we'll get next July. But realistically, until we actually get the volumetric tax rate in, we're all still going to be talking about this every single year.
It's kind of like a half measure, I guess.
Yeah. I see it. Look, excise is just a sin tax. You pay it.
Yeah.
There's obviously health effects from alcohol and needs to be funded. Like Rich said, if it is that, it is about health and the cost of health and that kind of thing, how you put, say, that a value on alcohol from this beverage costs that much, and so you have to put that much into the dollars per litre into the health tax, whereas that beverage, which is still the same unit of alcohol, its units of alcohol are at a lower rate or a higher rate. If that's the basis for it, there's no reason for it not to be volumetric. It just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And I think arguments like tourism and that are probably going to become less because beer tourism is becoming more of a thing as well.
Yeah.
Sure, maybe not quite to the level yet, but certainly more and more. And as the industry gets bigger, we're employing more and more people too. So that gap between the size and scale of the wine industry, we're never going to quite get there, but we'll still be meaningful enough to be able to be treated fairly, which is perhaps not what's happened historically. So I think it's just a matter of time, and people that don't like paying their tax will take that chalice and run with it and try and get it done. I've always accepted it is what it is of the day, and it's just
you know what you're getting yourself into right from the start when you set up a brewery. You know you've got to pay, you're going to be paying X amount of dollars through to tax, and obviously that adds a cost to the beer. But do we really want to see our market flooded with really cheap beer?
No, we don't want that. And equally, I just sometimes get tired of... I mean, we don't want to pay any more tax than we have to, but people in industry that say, oh, excise is killing me, I can't do it because the excise is too much. Well, you knew that before you got in, so that's not a reason to not do what you want to do or not be successful, because other people do it, and those rules were in black and white well before anybody started. So I sometimes just get a little bit tired of complaints about excise is so much. Sure, we want to get it down, but don't use it as a reason not for succeeding.
Just to change the topic completely, any plans for the future? Near future? Far future?
Oh, look, I mean, we're in a fairly good growth phase at the moment, I'm sort of pretty focused on trying to expand the brewery and as much as we need to keep up with the supply demand, and that's just got a heap of challenges because it's more people you need to employ, more equipment you need to buy, processes in making your beer might need to be ordered slightly to be able to produce the volume that you need, and it's just the beautiful daily challenges of running a business with 70 odd staff, So for me, I'm just on this ride. We're just on this ride at the moment, and we'll just keep on the ride until we jump off.
What have I got? For me, where am I? I'm in Sydney. I'll be back in Perth on Wednesday. Drop the cray pots out on Thursday morning. Pick them up on Friday morning. Feral, yeah. So I chatted a bit. So a couple of NPD SKUs. Biggie Juice is likely to be one that we see a bit more. In a smaller pack format version, we'll probably have some SKU rationalisation, so we might drop one out of our core range and But out there at the brew pub, Will's going to be doing what he always does, which is not tell anyone, and beer just arrives on our doorstep to drink and sell.
You find out the name of a beer. Find out when the you name, get to the pub.
Yeah, like, yeah, especially when one's called Browntown. It's not cool, Will. so that's all business as usual, really. And like Richard's, it's just good fun. Like it's always been, you know, working with people that love what they do.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, for us, we've got Trace does a great job in the brew pub, brew pub sort of does about 3,000 litres a week, so, it's a busy little job being the brewer there at the brew pub. So we always like to think we've got, you know, new beers coming out all the time, and we're trying to try and build up our sour program as well, and trying to just chip away at that. It's just not something we can, unfortunately, rush, for one, and also afford to just, you know, go at it really hard, because it is an expensive program doing sour beer. It's not as easy as what people think. There's certainly ways you can make sour beer quickly, but for me, I'm not sure they end up the best sort of quality beers out there.
Yeah. So. And so then when you have a little gap in your consistency of doing just even a small amount of production, it can take you a long time to catch up because, yeah, good sour beer takes a long time to make. That's just the fact of it. Sure, you can do a kettle sour or whatever, but ultimately that I don't think any of them have the depth or the
complexity that you get from a
long bacterial fermentation in age fermentation. So even if you can put your head down for 6 months and think, all right, we're going to do tank a week, put it in barrels. If then something comes up and you don't do it for another 6 months, you've just got a gap in your program, and so then you're up and down and you don't have any to come out for a while. You really do need to commit to it. So actually sitting here today in the Albert with the wildflower guys, that's their shtick, and that's all they do. I take my hat off to them for having a go at that and doing an amazing job, actually. They do an amazing job.
I'm actually having the, as it were, at the moment, from Wildfowl. It's tasting really good. What were you two drinking? Brendan, your beer's finished.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about it quickly?
I was on a BFH.
Yep. Classic.
Yep. So that's probably the, of all the brew pub only beers that we make, the one that's most requested.
Yep.
Not just by us. So we drink it the most as well, but everybody seems to request that. That was that was a BFH, just to take the edge off last night.
Richard, same.
Brendan brought me the beer.
Hop Hogan,
which is a strong
pale ale, but really quite linear, very very bitter, little lighter on the aromatics.
So is it kind of like halfway between Hop Hog and War Hog? Would you say?
Yeah, but less aromatics. It's just focused on the bitterness, a bit more strength. ABV wise, it's just a nice aggressive bitterness hit.
Sessionable strong ale.
Sessionable strong ale. Is that a thing?
It is now.
They're all sessionable.
Cool. I guess let's take a quick break before we go on break, though.
My beer's empty, mate, so let's take a break.
Before we go on break, Warhead and Cairns, anytime soon?
it's a project that's on the books, but I don't know about the timing of it. Yeah, it is a project on the books. Yeah,
I think everyone that loves that beer has been asking you when it's going to be packaged for like the last, you know, 10 years or whatever.
Well, it's probably been six or eight years.
It's a tricky one because our experience, like, we'd love to get a sour beer in a can, but once you get down into those low pHs, it actually does affect the can. So you've got to be really careful with the, doing your research with it and doing your testing, because otherwise what's going to happen is you're going to end up with a heap of leaking cans out in trade, and that's not good for anyone. So
To be honest, we'd probably be bottled with that beer.
Okay.
And it might be a cork and wire type thing, but that's a longer chat. Is one of the things we'd like to be able to do with it, whether it's sour beer. Well, I think we do it with our Imperial Stout Boris, which is, you know, it's available all year, all day, every day, all year. And it's certainly not at the price of a lot of other Imperial Stouts. It makes it affordable as a daily choice. So then you run into questions of, should we do fancy packaging in a bottle with a cork and wire and unique bottle and that kind of thing, drive the price up. It's not necessarily more profitable, but the price is higher because the cost of goods is higher, or do you just stick it in the standard consumer 330ml with a single label and allow people to access what's a fairly unique and different beer they may not be able to at a pretty good price.
Mm.
So we battle a bit with that. I know a lot of people would choose the style over the substance of that, but we'd probably almost... You almost usually go the other way. If you look at the Boris packaging, it's just a simple single label in the standard 330, but people get to buy Imperial Stout and drink it at not a stupid price.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, let's take a quick break, have a beer, and come back.
Good gear.
Sessionable.
Ever been in the work function and it's just cheap drinks on a boat for like the fifth year in a row, and you think to yourself, ugh, I wish I was doing something fun? Well, Dave's Travel and Events Group can help you out with that. With Dave's events, they can hook you up with some great team-building activities like axe throwing. Or they can curate a nice degustation matched with some good beer. Or they can even help you brew your own beer for your staff and clients. Whatever your needs, Dave's events can customise an awesome local beer experience for your workplace. So it doesn't have to be just drinks in a boat. Although it can totally be drinks in a boat. For more info, check out daves.com.au. Alright, and we are back and have some new beers in front of us. I'm drinking the Biggie Juice, which we talked about earlier. Nice, tasty, fruit juice-like New England IPA.
What is our venue, our brew pub manager calls it? Passione for adults.
Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts on New England IPA? Are you two fans of it, or
nah.
Not really? No?
Nah. I think my views are pretty well canvassed on that, and I'm not a lover of it. But that's not to say the rest of the brewing team,
yeah,
they're behind it, and hence that's why it's made. So
yeah,
I don't actually like the flavour of them.
Yeah,
I think the yeast just adds astringency as much as it adds fruitiness in many cases. So I'm not personally a fan. I like, so for example, the Brute IPA to me seems to have much more merit. Especially as shifting beer across category as well, like, you know, bone dry, really, really pale when they're made well, like that champagne colour, highly carbonated, low bitterness, and just the nice aromatics from hops left in it. I see lots of merit in a style like that, and a lot more skill in brewing it, to be honest, as well. So I'm hoping that it doesn't seem, I don't think it's going to happen, but I was hoping the Brute might start taking a bit of attention away from the Nipah, but it doesn't seem to be happening at a fast enough pace for me.
Yeah, look, I share Brendan's thoughts. I haven't been a big fan of, especially the ones that are yeast-driven haze. I love the ones that are hop-driven haze.
Yep.
And you can tell the difference when you're drinking them.
Yeah.
So the ones that have really good hop-driven haze, actually, I quite like drinking. But the ones that, with the big yeast haze in there, I mean, we do, as brewers, we work pretty hard to try and remove the yeast from the beer to showcase the, you know, the hops and the malt and the other flavours that the yeast gives the beer. And then when you buy beers that are now basically half yeast, aren't they? You know, they're that cloudy, they're probably half yeast. I don't really go for those, but the way the dry hopping works, and certainly with some of these new products like the Cryo Hop products, they give a lot of hop haze to the beer because of the quantity of hops that you're using, and those beers are really, really beautiful.
Yeah, I guess I don't know, I love New England IPAs, but my main issue is that a lot of brewers seem to make them for the aesthetics more than the flavour. So yeah, what you're talking about is like getting that yeast haze just for the sake of getting haze, and to me that's a bit like, you know, that's kind of cutting corners, and I'm not a fan of those particular interpretations. I do like this one, though.
No, so it could be a case of just perhaps the style suffers from people not doing it well. Maybe not as bad as I might think it is.
Yeah.
But I've just had a lot of poorly done versions of it.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is where it's now going to stop, that's what I'm more worried about, because if we get, you know, we've got Nipahs out there, so New England IPAs, we're now going to start having, you know, cloudy lagers and
it's just lazy
super muddy brewing. Brown ales and,
yeah.
You know, what are we going to, you know, where's it going to end up?
Oh, yeah. I hate the trend of naming things New England just because it's hazy and it's just almost losing its meaning, like the way India lost its meaning for a while, you know, for just to signify hoppy beers.
Well, it still has in its home in the UK where you got Green King.
Yeah. you guys have a couple of beers as well.
Yep. We're both on, what are we on? Good as Gold.
from Wildflower.
Yeah, from Wildflower, yeah. Which is great. I love it every time I have it.
Yeah, it's the 50-50 blend old and new.
Yep, and it is it's a really good way to make sour beer, is just to refresh it with a bit of younger beer to liven it up a bit, and probably just drop the acidity, drop the acidity level overall a little bit. So yep. I just think beautiful balance, really clean.
Yeah, big shout out to Tafer. He's doing a really good job, and I think, you know, we talked earlier about sour beer and how you've got to have patience and you can't rush things and stuff like that. And I think Tafer is it's a really good example of how sour beer should be made. And you know, and drinking this beer, it reminds me of, you know, sitting in the bar at Canteon drinking beer. That's you know, how good this beer is.
Mm, cool. So before we get to recommendations, how can people get in touch with you two, with the brand, with you personally, if you want to share that detail? On the internet, on fax or...
Yeah, on fax, or, yeah. Yeah, to write me a letter. So obviously, we, in regards to Feral, we've got all the usual socials and they're not hard to find. If you want to drop the company a general email, it'll just be beer@feralbrewing, or I'm at brendan@feralbrewing.com.au if anyone wanted to reach out directly. It's the best way
if
to get to
want
me.
The recipe for Hop Hog.
Yeah, yeah. I usually just write that on coasters at night when I've had a few too many beers, but I'll email it as well if they lost the coaster.
Yeah, much the same. You can get in contact with me through all the normal sort of social channels, and I'll go to the Ben Spoke website, which has got a few emails there, different email addresses you can send stuff through. At the moment, I actually love getting back to people, getting back to people, sort of three different people every day. So pretty keen to try and help anyone on their beer journey. So yeah, certainly people should reach out if they want to know something.
Cool.
Not saying I know everything either, so I might not be able to answer your question, but I'll try my damn hardest.
And if you're in the area in the Swan Valley for Feral, check out the brew pub.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you're in Canberra, in Braddon, check out the brew pub for Ben Spoke.
Yeah, usually find me there on a Thursday, arvo, having a few beers, so if you're around, drop in.
Cool. Let's jump straight into recommendations then.
Okay.
Who wants to kick off for a beer recommendation?
A beer, none other. So I'd clearly recommend.
Well, I think our beer recommendation is probably pretty obvious by what
it's
we're drinking
this
right
one.
Now.
This is amazing.
I mean,
yeah.
If you seriously haven't had any of Wildflower's beers, and in particular this one, seek them out, go and see them. They have a small little tasting room there at the facility, and you can. I'm not sure the opening times of that. I'm sure that's
open,
out there.
Yeah,
on
Yeah, Friday,
on,
Saturdays, 2 to 6. Don't ask me why I know that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's legitimate for us both to have the same one, same recommendation.
Yeah, that's fine.
But and not just this beer, I'd say any of the range. They're all right on point. Amazing.
Yeah. All great. I back that up. I'm going to recommend a sour beer from overseas. It's the Mikkola Spontan Double Raspberry that I had in a can, of all things, the other day.
Wow.
So it comes in like this 500ml can, or 440, I'm not exactly sure what size, with some amazing art, and yeah, it's just super tasty sour fruit juice, pretty much.
Oh, sour fruit juice?
Yeah. Raspberry. Well,
Brett sour, or?
I'm not 100% sure if it's Brett sour, but I think it is. But yeah, I've had a few of their other Spontan series, and some of them can be like overwhelmingly sour.
Yeah, so is it Spontan as in spontaneous?
Yeah.
So that would make you
supposedly
think Brett.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I got another beer. I'm lucky enough to do a brew a couple of weeks ago with Kelly Ryan from Fork and Brewer, and he brought over some of his beers from Fork and Brewer, and they're tasting pretty amazing. So if you're in New Zealand, in particular in Wellington, go and see the Fork and Brewer and try some good beers there.
Cool. Non-beer?
So non-beer recommendation was something I did with some beer mates earlier this year when we were up at the... We were lucky enough to be at the Craft Brewers Conference and World Beer Cup, which was in Nashville. But before that, we went to Louisville. And there's this little place that you can... It's kind of like a bowling lane, but instead of rolling bowling balls, you throw axes at boards. Mm. So we went, did some axe throwing one night. So for a couple of hours, we were throwing axes in a competition at a board and drinking Anderson Valley Goes while we did it.
Nice.
So the idea of booze and chucking an axe around is just not something
Seems totally safe.
I don't think anyone's ever going to tick that off in Australia to be allowed to.
Well, there is a place,
Oh, there is?
Right next to Willie the Boatman in Marrickville.
Oh, wow.
There's an axe throwing place called Maniacs, I believe it's called.
We might be there tonight, Rich. Okay, so there you go. So that is just a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. Richard?
Yeah, look, one of the things that Trace and I love to do when we go away or go on trips or even in our hometown in Canberra is to jump on our bikes, you know, and go for a ride. And I think it's such a – if you're going away on holidays, you're going to somewhere different, you haven't been there before, it's a great way to understand a city. And we went over to the Hop Festival this year in September and the Hop Harvest, I should say, in Yakima, Washington State in September and – went into San Francisco and jumped on a bike there and rode around the city, and really awesome, you know, bike tour you can do there. And it's not just about the breweries you stop in along the way, but it's just a great way to understand and get to know San Francisco, riding across the Golden Gate. I mean, everyone says, you know, you go past it, you take a picture or you drive across it, but how many people have actually ridden a bike across it? It's something worth doing. And then doing it with mates as well, so... BV didn't make that trip, but Scotty from Boulder did. So we were doing that with Scotty and his wife, and that was pretty, you know, that was a really good time.
Yeah, I noticed the Bridge Road organised a bike ride, kind of, instead of a brewery crawl, a kind of brewery ride around Sydney as part of Beer Week this weekend. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't get on my bike nearly enough as I should. But yeah.
Good
recommendation.
I bought a fancy bike when I lost my license, but it didn't get many kilometres put on it. do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I do. So I recently watched the movie Dazed and Confused from the early 90s. From the early 90s.
I watched it in the early 90s.
Yeah, it's actually a period film set in 1976.
And it's a really good book as well.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. But yeah, it's set in Texas in 1976 in like the era where everyone's just getting high and partying and drinking beer and hanging out. And it's like it's set in one day in this high school and everyone's just celebrating the last day of school. And it's fucking awesome. Everyone's just chilled out. The soundtrack is the most amazing soundtrack ever. And the great thing about the soundtrack is like every single song from that soundtrack is from that year. You know, it's released before the movie was set. So... It's insane how good that year was.
It's a ripper movie.
In terms of music, and yeah, it's a great movie as well.
Yeah, go and see that, kids.
Yeah. Dazed and Confused, check it out. Alrighty. I guess that's it. Thanks.
Mate, it's been fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining me for a bit of a catch up, I guess.
Yeah, it's good. Made sure that I got myself out of bed.
Yeah, yeah.
Decent hour to come here and talk to you.
I hope you two and everyone else enjoys the rest of their beer week.
Thanks, mate, you too.
Cheers.
Yeah, shout out to good beer. So if you're going into a bottle shop and looking to pick up a few beers, take your time to work through and have a look at all the beers that are in there. There's a lot of people making really good beer. So maybe take something different that you might not have tasted before. Give someone a go. Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Cheers.